The Talk of the Northwest, The Greg Hughes Show on Highland Radio.
A very good morning to you. It's Tuesday. It's the 4th of August. I'm Donna Marie Doherty. I'm in for Greg Hughes today, and I hope everyone is keeping very well. Don't forget to get in touch with us with what matters most to you on 086 60 25,000, or you can give us a call on 074 91 25,000. Now, there's been the bank holiday weekend and there is loads to cover, but we'll start today with the papers and I'm going to have a look at the Irish Times. And I didn't have to go too far today because we are on the front page, and by that I mean Letterkenny University Hospital. And it has been ranked as the poorest performance in the latest figures in relation to seeking urgent cancer cases not being seen in time. So almost 90% of urgent breast cancer referrals to Letterkenny University Hospital in April were not seen within the 2-week target time, and that's according to the latest HSE figures. Urgent symptomatic breast disease clinics aim to see 95% of their patients within 10 working days. Cases that are non-urgent and non-symptomatic are meant to be seen within 12 weeks. So that is the parameters. If you present with breast cancer symptoms and you are found to be at risk, those are the time frames that you're meant to be seen in. Urgent cases, 10 days. Non-urgent, 12 weeks. So in the Northwest region, which is Donegal, Sligo, Galway, Leitrim, West Cavan, Mayo and Roscommon, we had the worst performance there overall. Then within that, Letterkenny was the poorest. They say here, in its compliance fell from the 2-week standard, fell from 85% in February to 70.2% in March. That is nationally, or for that region. And then within that, Letterkenny had the poorest performance, with 81.9% of cases seen within 2 weeks in January, before a sharp drop to 6.5% and 6.6% in February and March respectively. Followed this by a slight increase then to 11.8% in April, which is quite low. And whenever we're talking about health, the age-old warning in relation to cancer is to be vigilant, to check yourself if you have any suspicions, to go to a doctor, to go to hospital, because early detection is key. And it's quite difficult to feel confident whenever this is what's on the front page of the paper. But regardless, you should still go. We're going to have more of an in-depth conversation on this today on the show. But this is sort of the basis of which we are working with. So please, though, I would like to very much emphasise, do not be discouraged if you find an irregularity in your breast still. Please go get it checked. We are off the bank holiday weekend. It was unfortunately another sad one here in Donegal. There was a road death, and it was a young man called Ronan King from Lurgan in County Armagh, as you would have heard Ryan mentioning in the news there, himself, and there was another young woman in the car who has been taken to hospital with serious injuries. Now, the Irish Independent are reporting that Gardaí caught a drug or drink driver every 47 minutes over the weekend. There was more than 3,400 speed detections over the bank holiday. Ralph Regal wrote up this piece, and in that he noted the death of Ronan, and there was another fatality in Carlow over the weekend, and it brings the total death toll for the year to 110 people. Very stark. That's, you know, as every year we say, that's 110 empty seats at the table. Another one of the fatalities over the bank holiday weekend was Glenn Hansard, or he was last week, I should say. We'll have a bit more on that as his funeral gets underway. Today we'll be looking at that in one of the other papers. But what caught my attention in particular about this story, other than the fact that it seems that every bank holiday Tuesday we sit and we have very similar conversations. In this particular piece, Ralph had spoken to Susan Gray, who's a Donegal woman, and also to Dennis Ferry, who's from Dunfanaghy. Now, Susan Gray is the founder of Park Road Safety Group, and frequently speaks out about road safety. And she's saying again, enforcement is crucial if we're to end the carnage on Irish roads. And then the Dennis Ferry, who's the Assistant Commissioner for Roads Policing and Community Engagement in An Garda Síochána Síochána, said that everyone is concerned by the increasing number of road deaths. Road safety needs to be a priority for everyone. And that for Gardaí, the message is simple, is to slow down, put away your phone, wear your seatbelt and never drive under the influence of drugs or alcohol, and that these simple actions will help save a life. Sometimes people may think that it's their own life they're saving and can lead to maybe more reckless actions, but it's also the lives of others. So we're here again with more sad news on a bank holiday Tuesday, and our condolences to Ronan's family and the family of the person who died in Carlow as well. Looking now to the Irish Daily Mail, there's two stories here that I want to highlight. One of them is in relation to autism, and this says that autism surge is down to social media, and it's exploring the idea that maybe it's trendy, and that it's becoming a social media phenomenon, that, you know, people are believing that they exhibit symptoms of autism. But often, while the internet can be informative, and you know, there is many cases where people have seen content and thought that that sounds a bit like them or somebody in their family or one of their friends, and it's gone on to a diagnosis. This is looking more specifically at the vague and broad influencer-style misleading ideas that are spread online. You'd have heard this, the Institute of Cognitive Neuroscience at the University College of London has published a paper, and it's saying that it's spreading simplified ideas about autism. Autism's a spectrum. It's very, I suppose, specific to each and every person. But with many things, and I feel like it's quite a fad on social media to be the word that flies around is neurospicy, to have some form of neurodivergency. And people are sort of diagnosing themselves. And if you feel that the symptoms line up, surely go get it checked out. It's great if, you know, this has helped to make your life easier and to be able to unlock assistance, I suppose, to help you navigate your life in a way that will help you. But the flippant, I would say, maybe way that neurodivergencies are being spread around on social media, particularly to maybe younger minds, and, you know, they accept that they have some type of neurospicy, and then, you know, nothing else is done. I think that is a problem. Another piece in the Daily Mail is by Brenda Power, and this is a column about women who persevere in spite of dire tragedy. And in this piece, she writes about Geraldine Mullen. Geraldine, as most people will know, lost her family in a very tragic incident in which the car that she was in with her two children and her husband entered the water in Loch Foyle, and she was the sole survivor of the incident. And last week, there was roadworks there that wasn't signposted properly, and they were fined €1.2 million for their role in the tragedy. But speaking afterwards, Geraldine paid tribute to Garda Sergeant Charlene Anderson, who's regularly on the show with the Garda Slot. And Charlene held her hand as she was pulled from the water and said, "I got you, I will not let you go." And Geraldine said that, true to her word, Charlene's been with her every day for the past, every step for the past 6 years. It's a nice read, so it is, nice is the wrong word. It's a powerful read, so it is, and it goes into Geraldine's story. Looking now to the Irish Daily Star, and we're looking at Glenn Hansen. So Glenn Hansen died last week. He was in a motorcycle collision. Many will know him for his music and some of his film work. But he had a public wake, so he did. And mourners, this is by Claudia Savage, mourners at the public wake yesterday said that he was a trailblazer for singer-songwriters. So he was waked in the Baroque Chapel at the Irish Museum of Modern Art and the Royal Hospital, Kilmainham in Dublin. And he was laid to repose. Everyone could go in, and the crowds there were immense. And I suppose a lot of people will have such an admiration for him. He is being laid to rest today. So he is. And there's been a lot of word about his coffin. They said it was a very nice coffin that was it's meant to be very Celtic in design. And it seems to have all of the hallmarks of that sort of really old traditional Irish wake. You know, there was lots of music. I don't think there would have been necessarily lots of alcohol at this particular wake, but, you know, that's the way. Whenever you hear of the old Irish wakes, and it was, and people had their instruments out, and the person was honoured for what they love, this seems to be the way that Glen Hazard's open wake went. And it's nice to see. It's nice to see people come together, you know, especially in times where it is more difficult. Looking now to the Irish Daily Mirror. Now, this story, a lot of people will be maybe wondering why I've chosen this one, but it's about Ariana Grande. But there's a wider conversation to have about this. So Ariana Grande, she's taken a step back from the public eye. She's had an absolute bumper year. She had her two Wicked films out. She released an album last week, and she also is the new Meet the Fockers film. She's in that too. And she was due to be in a play in the West End. But Ariana Grande has notably got thinner and thinner, and fans and have come out in concern. A lot of people have come out and blatantly criticised her, saying that she's too skinny and it's a bad role model. And it's really split people down the middle. There's a lot of people coming out and saying that nobody has the right to publicly scrutinise a woman's body and that you shouldn't do that. While others are saying this isn't just about fat shaming or skinny shaming or whatever term it is that they want to use, but that whenever you can see somebody's ribs connecting to their sternum, that it's displaying signs of an eating disorder, and that's not publicly safe for people to be seen. It's particularly younger girls who definitely would have, maybe who mightn't have been too familiar with Ariana, will now from the Wicked movie. So she's currently on tour, and I think that tour is ending up now this week or next week. And this play, she was meant to be opposite Jonathan Bailey, who was in Wicked as well. But it's an interesting one. A lot of other people critiquing it, saying, how is it that her fans, who are only concerned about her, are now being blamed? You know, there's a lot of different sort of talking points on that, but many people just saying that, you know, whenever you're in this type of position, that you should absolutely be more responsible whenever you have people looking at you. And that is just, I suppose, part and parcel of being in the limelight. Finally, now looking at the Irish Sun, and this, I thought this was interesting. It's a little piece that's in here, and it says that TDs get €250,000 to establish an office. TDs have claimed that more than a quarter of a million euro claimed money wise a quarter of a million euro towards setting up the cost of constituency offices in the last general election. All Dáil deputies are provided with serviced offices and facilities in Leinster House. However, they can also claim up to an allowance in relation to the setup if they choose to set up offices outside of Leinster House. Now, first off the bat, of course they're going to need an office outside. You know, what good is it for us here if our TDs have their offices in Dublin? You know, it's not. The ongoing running costs and bills are not included. So this is just for the, you know, actual establishment of it. But I suppose if you were to set up an office, set up a business, realistically, how much would it cost to get the premises, to get the different things that you'll need in it, you know, signage, and, you know, you want it to be nice as well, you're representing people. So what do you think? 250,000, is that too much to set up an office? Is it a bit of a reach maybe in the headline? Do you think Is it just something maybe to rile some people up? Let me know all your thoughts. It's 086 60 25,000 on the WhatsApp or the text. Voice notes always welcome. Or you can give Caroline and Shannon a ring on 074 91 25,000. Back after these. It is 9:20 here on the Greg Hughes Show on this Tuesday morning. Now it is August and the dreaded back to school is upon us. Kathleen joins me. And Kathleen, part of that dreaded back to school rush is trying to get the school buses sorted, and you've run into a bit of difficulty. Can you explain to us what's happening?
Okay, yeah. Good morning, Donna Marie. Thank you so much for giving me this opportunity to go on air. Yeah, my daughter Helena has been refused school transport as it is deemed concessionary. So she's a student at the Loretto Secondary School in Letterkenny. Mm-hmm. We have lived at the same address for the past 28 years. We live in Tara Court. Now, my neighbour has been granted a ticket, in Tara Court, and I just think the whole process is very unfair. Helena, is my seventh child, and six of her siblings availed of the service. There never was an issue. I just need to know, why have Bus Éireann changed it now? So from Loretto Secondary School to our address, mm-hmm. Bus Éireann is saying it's 3.9 kilometres, and to be eligible, it's 4.8.
Okay.
Now, what they're saying is that concessionary is given on the basis that if, obviously, children that are eligible, they're 4.8 kilometres will they will get it before us. But, my argument here is another child, and I'm very pleased that they got the transport in Tara Court, but we didn't. So they can't do it for one and then not do it for, this child goes to secondary school in Letterkenny as well. Mm. Children cannot cycle or walk to school. It's an 8 kilometre round trip, with heavy school bags.
Especially in secondary school, yes.
Yeah. So I approached the local office in Stranorlar, and they were very helpful, but their hands are tied. The decision ultimately lies with Portlaoise in County Offaly, and dealing with them is an absolute nightmare. So I have appealed it with. I have appealed the decision with the Department of Education and Youth, but the appeal will not be dealt with by the case handler until she returns from her holidays, which is mid-August. They have also advised me that they haven't given the case to anybody else, so I'll have to wait until she comes back, which means it will be too late before the school term starts. My argument here is, if the government wants or if the government are asking us to leave our cars at home, then why doesn't every child be given a ticket? I can't drop her off or collect her.
You and your partners are both in full time work, and the logistics just aren't working out there.
No, because I actually work in Milford. My husband could be working anywhere. He could be working in Derry or Donegal, anywhere in Donegal. So I can't drop her off. And 4 o'clock, certainly this, I can't. I finish at 5. I can't be there at 4 o'clock to collect her. I just think the whole thing is a complete disgrace. And, it just causes a considerable level of stress.
Absolutely.
And Donna, I was just going to ask you, if you could share my number, or email with any parent who's in the same predicament. Mm. I'm pretty sure there is, there's other parents out there in the same.
There's definitely at least one, Kathleen. We have a text and here saying, I'm in the same situation as Kathleen. It's ridiculous and worse. We're still trying to get answers from Bus Éireann and it seems to be impossible. Kathleen, if you just wait there one moment, we have Councillor Michael McBride on the line here, who I believe you've been speaking to. Councillor McBride, what do we do whenever the people that we're meant to go to help us with this are on holidays and there's nobody there to, try and get it sorted?
Good morning, everyone. I suppose I've been speaking to Kathleen yesterday, and she's outlined her situation to me, which she's outlined very well again there this morning. And I suppose it's, you know, whenever our daughter Elena is the youngest of seven, and they've all been accommodated on the bus, Kathleen was able to tell me that our next door neighbour had got a bus ticket for their child, and Kathleen has left high and dry. It's a very, very stressful situation. Mm. It's also a very common situation at this time of year as county councillors. Maybe Kathleen's a week or two ahead of when the normal calls start to come in, when people really realise when they get back from their holidays that they don't have bus tickets for their children. And I think it's unacceptable. It's a very common problem. And I suppose Helena's a student at Loretto School in Letterkenny. And I just feel, you know, like Kathleen highlighted there about, you know, getting cars off the road as well and getting people bused to school. And everything she said is 100% right. And what, you know, for the staff member that's handling the case to be off and work, then fair enough, everybody is entitled to their holidays. And maybe the children of their own, but there should be a person there, you know, working with the Department of Education and Youth that can step into the breach and deal with these problems as they come along. Yeah. It's unacceptable that people are strung out to the 11th hour, and it goes on year after year. And I honestly feel myself it's time that the whole thing of school bus tickets was overhauled, and that people would know before, you know, just at the end of the school year where they're going to be for the following year. Because at that stage of the year, the schools already know where they're, you know, where enrolment is, who's enrolled in the school, and who's going to be travelling. And I think leaving it to the 11th hour is unacceptable, in my opinion.
But Councillor McBride, this is happening every year, and I have no doubt that this time next year, myself or Greg or somebody in the newsroom will be speaking to you or one of your colleagues about this again. You know, if we're coming into the same problem every year, why isn't it being fixed?
Well, that's a million-dollar question. You know, when the closer it gets to the school year, the more difficult it is to make contact, because I think the lines will just be jammed as they are every other year. And, you know, decision time obviously needs to be brought forward. Mm. And I honestly, you know, think that whole system should be reviewed from top to bottom. I've been in contact with an Oireachtas member trying to help out in this situation, you know, but if the people that are making the decisions and dealing with the cases aren't there, then it's going to be a very, very difficult situation. And Kathleen highlighted it very well. You have the thing about putting, you know, getting cars off the road on school mornings where possible. Makes a lot of sense. But also the weight of the school bags that they're carrying. It's impossible to walk from Tara Court to the convent in Letterkenny in the morning and deal with the school bags and the amount of books that they have to carry.
Especially and, the first 2 weeks.
Parents can't be expected to be there to drop them off and pick them up in the modern world. Both parents have to be working, you know, where you have large families and mortgages and care payments and mm-hmm. the cost of living and everything like that. So, you know, I think the thing needs to be really, there needs to be a review of the whole system, and that decisions need to be made much earlier, and that there would be a system open to parents to get in and maybe you know, ask for a review of their case much earlier than it is there at the moment. Mm. Because it's totally unfair, and it's very, very stressful for the parents and the students when they run up to the start of the new school year again.
It is. Thank you very much for that, Councillor McBride. Kathleen, just to come back, so I suppose as it stands, you know, in the worst case scenario where a bus doesn't get sorted, what, do you have any idea of how you're going to manage?
Absolutely not. I really don't. But I will, you know, if the appeal process, you know, if it doesn't take place in time, or if it's September before I get an answer, you know, I think you can go to the ombudsman, but that's another long wait. But no, I don't have a plan B at the minute. No.
Well, Kathleen, thank you very much for joining us this morning. And as we have your number here, and you're very open to I suppose, other people who are inevitably going to find themselves in,
yeah,
the same.
100%. I will welcome anybody that sends me a message, either by phone or email. Because we just need to know, is there enough numbers in Letterkenny to fight the department for another bus?
It is, because it seems that the numbers are there, then that would make sense. Kathleen, thank you so much this morning. And
okay, all right, Donna Marie,
Thank you so much. That's a very difficult situation to be in. And it's only the start of August yet, so no doubt that there will be more people coming forward. So if you haven't checked yet to make sure that your child has a place on the bus, that would be the first thing to do. Make sure that you have your place on the bus. And if not, get in touch with us. I'd love to talk to you, and Kathleen also would very much like to talk to you. We'll have more up after this. Okay, it's 9:30 here on Highland Radio. I want to, just whenever we're on the topic of buses, bring this to your attention first. It was somebody who got in touch with the show. They say that they're wondering if anyone else has had a similar experience as their son with Bus Erin. Their son got the bus home from Letterkenny on Wednesday evening to Belbuffet. When the bus didn't stop in Belbuffet, he walked up to the driver and said he missed the bus stop and asked could he stop and let him off. The driver point blank refused to stop, saying tough, his next stop was Donegal Town and he'd have to wait. Despite the pleas to stop, he drove to Donegal Town, 22 kilometres away. Further up the road, my son explained, there's a place here you can pull in safely and let me off and I can walk back. But no, he still refused. And then he got aggressive and told him to sit down and stop distracting him. He then had to get a taxi back to Belbuffet. Very unacceptable behaviour from the bus driver. Now, we have got in contact with Bus Erin, and once there's an update on that, we will let you know. But let me know, what do you think? Who was in the right here? Because it's an interesting one, because obviously the bus driver has rules to follow. But, you know, they can't just pull in anywhere. If anything had happened, I suppose probably what the bus driver's thinking. But all in all, it's not ideal, so it's not. Councillor Dakota McVanman joins us now. Dakota, good morning to you. I wish that we were speaking on some better circumstances, but unfortunately, you were one of the female county councillors who was getting harassed, essentially, just to call it what it was. So what happened?
Yeah, good morning, Donna Marie. Thanks for having me on. Yeah, so for me, it was last Wednesday. I got the call from an unknown number. And when I answered then, they pretty much had told me that they wanted to confess to a sexual related crime. They wanted to confide in me. Originally, they had told me they were in Donegal, but it's clear now that they weren't. So at the time, I was really concerned. And, you know, they said that they wanted to build a relationship with me. They thought I looked attractive, this kind of stuff. So it was quite worrying.
That is horrific, Dakota. That must have been awful to get that call. Was it just one call? Did they keep calling?
No, yeah, they kept calling. So the first call, I would say the first call was a good 10, 15 minutes long, you know, just because he kept going on. And then he immediately rang back and asked, could he ring me later on tonight? And at the time, I was kind of like, yeah, that's grand, because I didn't want to, because at the time I thought he was in Donegal, so I didn't want to alarm him that, you know, no, I wasn't willing to do this. But I went straight to the guards then. But yeah, he continued to call me that night then. And one of the calls I did tell him, like, I was like, you know, I'm not the right person to be talking to. I'm not interested in this. And he was very persistent and the calls did continue, but I didn't answer them from then on then.
How long was it before you realised that you weren't the only one that he was contacting?
Yeah, so it was only that evening then that the AILG, they had reached out and had told us that this was ongoing for a lot of different female councillors and that it was nationwide. So that definitely took a big relief off me because when you think it was just you being targeted, it's very scary, especially when they tell you they're nearby, which obviously was lies. But at least when it's nationwide, you know, you can kind of take a bit of that pressure off you.
Yeah. And, you know, because you're a young woman and you have your own family as well. And I'm just thinking, like, if trying to put myself in that position, that if I had gotten those calls, and to think that it's somebody nearby, and you know, being a public representative, people do know you, like they know that you're the local councillor for Balbuffet. You know, it's not going to be terribly hard to find you.
You know, yeah, exactly. Yeah. No, it's a very real, scary threat almost. Yeah, definitely.
It has been discovered now that he is, you know, that he is, it's we believe or we understand that it's one person that he's been contacting many, many people. How did you take to it whenever you realised that it was just women?
It was probably not too surprising, to be honest, given what he was so-called confessing to. It's not surprising that he only contacted women, but it just again shows the difficulties that women face, especially in politics, although it's clear that he didn't have a particular political motive as such, because he targeted every female regardless of whether you had a party or you were independent, and he didn't mention anything politics wise, but it's clear that he was targeting women, which is very concerning. Like, you know, we have such a low rate of women in politics as it is, and you know, to target women that have put themselves out there, you know, make themselves available to the public, it's really discouraging.
It is, and you know, we know it's part and parcel that whenever you do go into the public sphere that you inevitably you'll come into some kind of discourse that you're not comfortable with or that you're not best pleased with. I had spoken to Councillor Joy Beard about it, and she did want to try and reach out and say, you know, don't let this put you off if you were going into politics. But there is more that can be done, I think, to make politicians or to like people in the public sphere, just to make it a bit safer. You know, you're very accessible.
Yeah, you are very accessible, definitely. And, you know, the majority of the calls are pleasant. Like, it is a small minority then that does cause this kind of havoc. But, like, yeah, it definitely shouldn't discourage anyone. Definitely not. Like, this is probably the first kind of issue I've had now in the 2 years, major issue anyway. So it definitely shouldn't discourage women from going into politics or going into the public realm.
Is there anything that you think should change to try and encourage more women to come into politics?
I suppose it's putting the supports in place, you know, because it is daunting going out there. You know, you're putting yourself out there, but once you have the supports, like, you know, whether you're with a party or you're independent, you still need that support group. Yeah. Around you, definitely, like, especially if you have a young child, like I did in my case, like, you know, having someone there to be able to help with childcare, and, you know, even places in childcare too is a massive thing, you know, to get women out to any kind of job. Yeah. Or in any field. So it's getting the support system. I think that's the main one, and it's encouraging. Like, it's like someone might look at our council and see that there's 37 councillors and 3 females. Like, that can be very discouraging.
Yeah.
I think, you know, whenever you look at that, you might, as a woman, you might look at it and think, oh, you know, is there much point, like, in women going in? Like, you know, it's mm-hmm. always all men. But it's getting that kind of point crossed that no, women can do this.
And this is just something that I was just wondering as you were speaking there. You're with Sinn Féin, and Sinn Féin has some very, very strong household names here. You know, I'm thinking namely of Piers Doherty and Padraic McLaughlin. How have you found being the only Sinn Féin representative in Donegal that is a woman? Like, you know, there's times where I find in my work I get a lot of thanks, pet. Good wee girl, you know, a lot of that. Would you come across that much?
Yeah, definitely would. Yeah, I don't know, is that like an Irish kind of Donegal thing or what it is? But no, I definitely would get that. I don't think people mean it sometimes. Mm. I think it's a habit. But in fairness, within my party, I think I've I think I'm well respected in terms of gender. I don't think anybody has really looked at me any different for my gender, but I do get what you're saying. I definitely do get that kind of, you know, put me in the middle of the pictures, you know, she's the female, you know, you kind of get that kind of treatment sometimes, you know, like, oh, put her to the front of the photo, she's the only girl here, like, you know, you get that kind of stuff. But I think overall it's quite well balanced.
Well, that's good. And Dakota, well, then just finally, in the event where somebody does find themselves getting frightening phone calls like that, it is just to do what you did, is to go to the guards.
Yeah, definitely go to the guards, 100%. They were very supportive of me. I went into the local one here in Balbuffet, and they were very supportive. So they are there to help, you know.
Perfect. Dakota, thank you very much for that. I just as from a woman of the same age, I'm so horrifically sorry that you had to go through that. But thank you for coming on and speaking up about it, because I do believe that by speaking about them is the only way about these incidents is to give people the strength to come forward about them. So thank you for your time this morning.
Thank you, Donna Marie.
Okay, that is Councillor Dakota Nick Vanman there, and we'll have more up after this short break. Now, today, mostly cloudy and rather misty, I think. Dare I say, I think our summer may be gone. It is to brighten up with some sunny spells gradually developing, along with showers, some heavy, and there will be thunderstorms, humid with highest temperatures of 18 to 22 degrees. So it's not a day for putting your washing out on the line. We had a message in here about the cost of electricity, wondering if anyone could help you. They want to change your electricity suppliers. We're with prepay power and it's very expensive. Any information, be very grateful if you have time. So any recommendations? My contract, my yearly contract's up, and I feel like the idea of trying to go about that is so overwhelming. Greg's always very good at addressing this, so I'll be asking him for my own personal want to. And I also have a comment in here about the cost of oil, saying that it's on the up again now, which is, oh my goodness, I had my oil prices here. Oh, they left. They're back. They're saying that 500 litres of oil was 760 at one point last week. I can tell you, as of yesterday, the average price in Donegal for 500 litres of oil is €709.50, which is up nearly 100 from the end of June. Okay, I have with me on the line Teresa, who is the owner of Mullins Shop in Malin Head. Teresa, good morning. We're speaking today in relation to a new... I suppose it's nearly like a license fee to sell cigarettes and vapes. As a smaller shop in rural Donegal, I imagine that's a lot of what people are coming in to buy off of you.
Hello, Donna Marie. As I say, I'm Teresa. Mullins Shop is a wee country shop in Malin Head. It provides a service and a focal point for the community. My granny, Mary Mullen, bought this shop about 1947 from the Boggs family. Mm. My mother, Patricia, married into the shop in 1960, and she ran the shop from then on, and she retired completely at the start of COVID. But she's 91 and she's still a presence, very much a presence around the shop. I run the shop now with my daughter Claire and my niece Mary Kate, and our shop building was built in the 1890s. I was stuck. Most of the usual things that a traditional country shop would. Not quite a needle to an anchor. We have no anchors, but we do have some fishing tackle. Tobacco products account for about 15% of our total turnover. Mm. They had a very small markup, but most people who came into the shop for cigarettes bought something else, you know, coffee, ice cream, ham. We registered to sell tobacco and only bought through the track and trace regime, and we only sold to over 18s. So a licence fee came in February of €1,000 per year for the sale of cigarettes and €800 a year for the sale of vapes additionally. Mm-hmm. And my gripe, I'm not here for an advocate for smoking or cigarettes, but my gripe is that I am going to pay the same as the biggest and busiest shop in the country, or a shop like a tobacconist or a newsagent beside Bus Aris in Dublin. And that's not fair.
It's not. And right. From that, no. you've decided to stop selling them.
We've stopped selling cigarettes. Now, so there's a couple of wee points I want to make. Cigarettes are never an impulse buy. They're not on display. People come into the shop because they want to buy cigarettes. Most people who buy the cigarettes in our shop are over the age of 40. And nobody will give up cigarettes because I've had to stop selling them.
Yeah.
You know, that is the biggest thing. Anyone came into the shop and bought cigarettes, they bought something else. You know, like yesterday evening, my typical cigarette customer came in. He came in with his daughter and he asked her what she wanted. And he asked at the same time for 20 Benson Hedges. And he was heading towards the fridge to pick up his usual Lucozade Sport. And on hearing that we don't stock them anymore, he just turned the ceiling out the door. The farmers, the builders, the fishermen, the delivery men, etc., won't have time to stop at one shop for their cigarettes and another for, you know, their drinks and snacks. So it remains to be seen whether my shop will be viable in the future.
Teresa, I can't imagine the weight of that. You know, you said there that it was your grandmother that started the shop, and your daughter's working there now.
Yes.
So that's four generations.
My daughter and my niece work in the summertime. No, so they're at university and they work in the summertime. And the shop's good crack. You know, we give tourist information. People get lost coming to us. They look where to go. You know, it is, like, most of our customers are our friends. You know, they become friends over the years. They come back year after year, or there's people come, you know, if they're lonely, they come for a chat. And we're losing all this.
It is, and that's again, just, you know, for you to have to be the one to make that call. I imagine you had many, I suppose, sleepless nights over it, and more to come now as you're trying to see how it plays out.
You see, the shop isn't viable in the winter time. I could close the shop in the winter time and open from Easter to Halloween, I could make money. But it's a different world.
It is. It's changing. I've Councillor Ali Farn there. Teresa, if you just stay on the line for me. Councillor, much on the same line as Teresa, it's not that you're advocating for the sale of cigarettes and vapes. It's that Mullins Shop in Malin Head shouldn't be held to the same account as a large supermarket.
That's exactly it, Donna Marie. Well, I don't smoke either, just like Teresa. And Teresa's a cousin of mine. It's where I buy my ice cream, as most people will know. But it's a small rural shop. It's a shop that provides a service. And like many other ones around, you know, the whole of Anishone, the whole of Donegal, small, just surviving type of a business that, you know, provides a vital service that when you run out, when a visitor lands and you have no biscuits in the house and you have to run for the biscuits or a litre of milk late at night or, you know, a slice of ham or bacon, they're the kind of shops that, you know, that we need to continue to support and need them in our community. And that's this legislation that our government brought on. You know, it's a stroke of a pen, and I think it's fairly ruthless for the small. If it was a sliding scale, maybe. Like anybody who sells cigarettes will know the profit margin in cigarettes is horrendous. You're nearly only providing a service. And I know the government wants us all to stop selling cigarettes, but if that was the case, they should ban them full stop. You know, I'm very disappointed that the likes of the small shop can't... you know, can't get it. As Teresa was trying to say, a smaller licence fee for their small shop as opposed to a big £1,000 fee for the bigger shop.
It is, and you both of you have pointed out there's a cultural element of your small corner shop. You know, it's what people grew up with. You know, the Mullins shop there, it's been in the family for four generations, and for something that seems so ill thought out to be what could be taken it away is it's a difficult thing to deal with.
Donna, it's like lots of things that's done in this country. It's done at the stroke of a pen, maybe not thought out well enough. Doesn't really take into consideration the Joe Bloggs on the street, the person in, you know, rural Ireland. We all know, like, there's, you can get any amount of cigarettes in the black market and one thing or another. And no wonder, because the price of cigarettes is horrendous, and most of the money that for a price of a packet of fags now is government, goes to the government anyway. Like, when I was on the holidays last, I bought a carton of fags for €10. Like, yeah. The same would be 160 here, 180 for a friend, right? But, you know, like, they're making enough money on cigarettes in this country without more bureaucracy, more legislation, and, you know, in truth, hurting the people who are doing their best to exist.
Yeah. Well, Councillor Ali Fearn, thank you very much for that. Drew, I just want to come back to you. You know, the way things are going now, how long do you think that Mullins will be able to manage?
Well, we'll do it this winter and we'll see. And that's the truth. You know, it's not like, if I lose that cohort of my customers, that's another lot gone.
Mm.
Like, most people will do their big shop in Carindona, and that's grand. But yeah, if you don't support your wee shop at all, you won't be there.
No, and that is the case of it. And nobody's disputing that smoking has very harmful side effects. But I suppose just what you're saying is that you're not, by you stopping to sell cigarettes isn't going to stop somebody from smoking.
No.
Teresa,
thanks,
you. Thank you very much for that. We really appreciate it. If you have any thoughts on that, please do get in touch with us. You know, have you had this experience where, you know, you've went in to buy a box of cigarettes and, you know, you had to leave? Because as much as everybody does want to support their small shop, we're in a cost of living crisis as well. And, you know, Teresa said it herself, people aren't going to go to the likes of Mullins and Mallon Head for their bread and their milk and then have to go on down the road to get a box of cigarettes. It's a worrying time. So it is, we're going to take the news and the obituaries and we'll be back with more after that. Now we're into the second hour of the Greg Hughes Show on this Tuesday morning. Could you please play a request? My parents will be listening. It's Desi and Anne Harkin in Drumini in Letterkenny, and they were 55 years married last Friday. Now Greg was out on an outside broadcast, so this was sent in and we just wanted to make sure that you did get to hear it. So they're wishing you a very happy wedding anniversary all the way from Neira, Costa del Sol. See you very soon. Lots of love from your daughter Tina and grandchildren Zara, Sky, Jed and Lily. Have a wonderful day. And just to flag, there is a bad oil spill at the top of the hill before McCaffrey's Quarry in Ballyshannon. You're on top of it there before that you realise you're on it. So if you're up driving that neck of the woods, please do be careful and just exercise a little bit of caution there. Or if you hear this and you know somebody who's going to be up that direction, let them know. And I want to say hello to Shane Devine, who's listening in from Waterford, as a Daniel O'Donnell fan, just like many of us are. Okay, Helena has gotten in touch, and Helena, you're in a bit of a tight spot, as putting it too lightly. Your husband Hugh is in hospital, and he had gotten a kidney transplant. What's your situation as it stands, Helena?
Yeah, so 10 years ago, Hugh would have had a kidney transplant. I would have donated to him. And it is looked after in Dublin. So every 3 or 4 months, he goes up to Dublin for an appointment. Around the first week of July, he started to feel unwell. So we phoned into the GP to make an appointment around the 10th of July. I suppose the earliest appointment was on the 25th of July, which he attended. And bloods were taken at that appointment. His GP is excellent, covered every base and took bloods to see what was going on, just because of the symptoms he was having. And he got a call that afternoon on the 25th from the laboratory in Letterkenny Hospital to say that the results were so concerning he needed to make his way up to the A&E, which he did. And he was accepted there as a patient on the evening of the 25th. Got a bed on the morning of the 26th, and very quickly they established that he needed specialist kidney treatment in Dublin. That's where the specialist hospital is for kidney issues. It's in Beaumont Hospital. So like that, Letterkenny arranged very quickly. They've been excellent. and getting him under the care of a doctor there to be organized for transfer. So on the 27th, he was accepted as a patient in Beaumont Hospital and accepted for transfer. But as of today, is still waiting in Letterkenny Hospital for a specialist renal bed. Letterkenny is not able to do the diagnostics that he needs to find out what's wrong with his kidney, if the transplant is still going to remain viable, and what kind of treatments that can be done to maintain his kidney, whatever kidney function that he has left. And the staff in Letterkenny, again, excellent. They're phoning the bed manager in Beaumont Hospital 2 to 3 times a day, trying to find out what's happening. It's been 9 days since he was accepted as a patient in Beaumont Hospital. And there's still, as of today, no beds available for Hugh in Beaumont Hospital. I think there's 22 specialist beds, I've been told, that are up in Beaumont Hospital for what Hugh needs. It's a very specialist bed. And I just find it so frustrating and hard to believe that here we are 9 days later and there's still no bed available. Like, the impact it's having on us as a family is awful. Like, we're just frightened every day. We just miss normal life. You know, we miss waking up without fear of what's going to happen, without being able to make plans to go to work, to know everything is okay at home. So right now, every day, waiting for answers, it's just exhausting.
It is, and the mental burden of that alone is so heavy. Helena, so you are, I see you've reached day 10 now, is it, of waiting for a bed?
Yeah, so he's been in hospital for 12 days, and day 10 this morning, waiting for a bed, and it's just, no, I don't know what it is. It's we're just forgotten here. Like, and people say, oh, no, you're not forgotten in the Northwest. We are, because if we were closer to Dublin, you'd be seen right away. You know, you'd go to that hospital because it's your closest hospital. But yeah, it's just very frustrating.
What kind of form is Hugh in at the moment?
He's in terrible form. You know, the uncertainty of what is happening. We just don't know. Letterkenny is doing everything. All they can provide is monitoring. So we don't know any details really about what his kidney function is, what the numbers are. And we don't know, is this transplant still viable? We don't know, is it going to lead to a more serious condition happening, you know, by the time he gets to Dublin? It's just the uncertainty. It's taken out of our own lives. Like, we both work, we have kids, like, and our life has essentially just been put on hold for the last 12 days, and we can't do anything about it.
And Helena, the initial transplant, you said, was that 10 years ago? And was it you that
donated? That was 10 years ago, yeah.
And so
years ago, April.
Wow. And I can imagine at that time, you know, for both of you to go under such major surgery would have been such an upheaval for that period of time. But it was sort of in the hope that afterwards it would be on to maybe more of a life free from this kind of anxiety around it.
And we have had, you know, an amazing 10 years, and we just want to know what's, because typically kidney transplants last much longer than 10 years. So we just really, he just really needs to get to Beaumont. He really needs to get this bed to find out what is happening. Letterkenny can't do any more for him. And I think they're as frustrated as me at this point. And it's just the fact that you're sitting watching your loved one, and even for him, sitting knowing that it's some kind, there's a ticking time bomb, and that we don't know what it's going to do. We don't, like, and every day that passes is a day that his kidney could be becoming, his transplanted kidney could be becoming sicker and sicker as the days go on with no treatment and no diagnostics at all.
And that's so tough for you as well. You know, whenever you have children in there, you know, obviously quite worried, and, you know, you need to stay strong for them and for you as well. You said, though, that you wanted to share the story to try and raise awareness that, you know, we are here in Letterkenny, and Beaumont must be a million miles away at the moment.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, and I know that we're probably not the only family going through this at the minute. Like, if there's one, there's definitely more than one, you know. And I think sometimes we forget and we go on tangents about silly things, you know, about cars being parked funny in certain places, but nobody ever wants. I think sometimes we're a bit too polite when it comes to really serious things. And I think the only way to get things changed is to make a bit of noise about them and to you know, they say that the money follows the patient and they want all these specialist beds and specialist hospitals. But then when things go wrong, then patients from outside of those specialist areas are left absolutely, you know, waiting without any clear path or any clear information about what's going to happen next. You know, like they can't even tell us today, the staff in Letterkenny, just that he's still on the transfer list and when a bed becomes available. So it could be today or it could be 2 weeks from now. Like there's just no clear pathway, which is a terrible burden, you know, for families and for the patient themselves. You know, like your mental health plays so much into your physical health. And like that, when your physical health isn't good, if your mental health isn't good either, it's not a positive place to be in.
It's a much bigger struggle. So it is, Helena. Thank you so much for coming on with us, and genuinely take care of yourself as well. As you said, you know, to look after your own mental health, and hopefully we'll hear from you again with good news. That's Helena there, and if you missed the start there, her husband Hugh is has been accepted as a patient to Beaumont Hospital, and it's been 10 days now and he still hasn't managed to receive a bed there. We've reached out to the HSC, so we're hoping that hopefully they'll get some good news soon. We have Garda Grainne Doherty in from the Letterkenny Garda Station today. Grainne, good morning. I suppose to start off, we have the fatal collision that happened in Pettigo, the bank holiday. It's the news that nobody wants to hear, but sadly, we're too often expecting it.
Yeah, so Gardaí are appealing for witnesses.
Following a fatal road traffic collision, this occurred on the R232 at Fincashel, Pettigo, on Sunday the 2nd of August. The collision involved a car and a 4x4 vehicle. It occurred around 2:45 p.m. The driver of the car, a male in his 20s, was pronounced deceased at the scene. A passenger of the car, a female in her 20s, was transported to hospital with serious injuries. The driver and sole occupant of the second vehicle, a male in his 60s, was also brought to hospital for assessment only. So Gardaí are appealing to anyone who might have travelled on the R232 near Pettigo at the time of the collision to come forward. Road users who may have camera footage, including dash cam or mobile phone footage, are asked to make it available to investigating Gardaí. Anybody with information are asked to contact Ballyshannon Gardaí on 071-985-8530, the Garda Confidential line 1800-666-111 or any Garda station.
And that confidential line is totally confidential.
That's 100%. That goes with all of our appeals today, yeah. And we often discuss the confidential line when I'm on here with Greg. The confidential line, when you call, you get through to a sort of an automated answering service. It's like leaving a voicemail for somebody, really. There's a beep. You leave your message. You're not required to leave any of your own personal details, just whatever information you wish to leave.
Yeah, just in relation to that appeal specifically, whenever there has been a fatality and people might be a bit weary, but that is one way of doing it. Appealing now for another road traffic collision in Ballyshannon.
Yes, this collision involved two vehicles that occurred at the Erin roundabout at Coolcolly, Ballyshannon. So on the N15, between 9:50 p.m. and 10 p.m. on Saturday the 25th of July. So a female passenger from one of these vehicles was taken to hospital to receive medical treatment for serious but non-life-threatening injuries. We're appealing to any road users who may have travelled in that area between 9:45 p.m. and 10 p.m. who have dash cam footage to make it available to us. If anybody witnessed this collision, we're asking them to contact Gardaí in Ballyshannon on 071-985-8530 or, of course, the Garda Confidential line or any Garda station, whichever station's closest to you.
Going next to Greencastle, there's a burglary that happened.
Yes, this burglary occurred at a property in the area of Struve, Greencastle, on Sunday the 26th of July between approximately 1 a.m. and 6 a.m. So an unlocked shed at the rear of this property was entered. A number of tools were stolen from within, including a DeWalt drill, a Bosch hammer drill and a number then of smaller type tools. So we're appealing to anybody who might have observed any type of suspicious activity, people or vehicles in that area in the early hours of that morning to contact Gardaí in Buncrana on 932-0540. And if anybody should come across similar type tools for sale on a second hand basis, please alert Gardaí so that matter can be checked out. Could be totally innocent, but just alert us, you know, just so that we can check it
better,
out.
Yeah, better safe than sorry. It's I find that the tool ones are so disheartening because that's usually that person's line of work.
Exactly, yeah.
They're valuable, they're expensive.
Yeah, and they're relying on them, as you say. They're relying on them for their livelihood, you know. And we're just a bit of advice as well in relation to sheds, if that's okay. And we're always talking about home security, light up, lock up, secure your home. That's important, but it's also important too to ensure that your shed isn't seen as an attractive option for criminals to target. We're asking people, use quality locks on your garden shed and secure valuable property, tools, bikes, etc. within. always lock your shed when it's not being used or when it's not attended. And I think a lot of people just leave the shed lying open, you know, especially if they're in the house or maybe bedtime. You forget to lock the shed up and you think, I'll do it in the morning. Make sure your shed's always locked. You know, there's such valuable property. We all keep in our sheds, you know, between ride-on mowers, tools. You know, there's a wealth of property within sheds, really. And if you're securing a home, why not to secure the shed? Just make sure it's locked, especially before you go to bed at night time. Don't make life easy for burglars and store away ladders, tools, etc. that might make it easy for a criminal to maybe then use to break into your home. You know, don't leave these sorts of things lying around your house. Property mark your property and photograph valuable possessions such as lawnmowers, bicycles and any expensive tools that you have. Serial numbers on any of your tools or ride-on mowers or any of those types of things. Take note of the serial numbers. And always report any type of suspicious activity you observe to Gardaí immediately. People are hesitant at times, you know, they think it seems silly. The smallest thing that might seem silly to you could be massive. It could, you know, it could be massive to us, a massive piece of information and a vital piece of information.
And those serial numbers as well, it can just be taken a photo.
Just take a photo.
It doesn't
need to be
a notebook where you need to have everything written down and catalogued extensively. A photo that, and if you ever find yourself in the position, you'll be glad that you've done it. Another burglary in a holiday home in Dunmow.
Yes, this burglary occurred at a holiday home in the area of Mahery, Dunmow, between approximately 1 a.m. and 3 a.m. on Monday, the 3rd of August. So during that time, an unlocked house was entered and a number of items were disturbed, you know, flung around within the property. A Black Canon G6400 camera was stolen during the course of this incident. A number of the residents were expected home late. The door then had been left unlocked for them by the others who were actually in bed at the time of the incident, so they were in the property. No damage was caused. We're appealing to anybody who might have travelled in that area with a dash cam between those times, please make that footage available to us. Very busy time now over that area with the festival and everything, you know, and hopefully maybe taxi drivers particularly would have been in and out all around that area, might have dash cam footage. If they have, please contact us. If anybody has any relevant information, we're asking them to contact Ballyshannon Gardaí on 071 985 8530. And again, if anybody comes across a similar type camera for sale on a second-hand basis, alert us. And look, we're not pointing the finger. People are entitled to sell property. We don't want people thinking we're checking out everything that goes up for sale.
But it's a good way to find a lead. And I suppose that just highlights it again that so many burglaries, it usually is just a chancer.
Yeah, and you know, that highlights also the importance of keeping note of the serial number off your property. I mean, a camera's a camera. You're not going to know unless the person has kept. You know, if you have your serial number, and we often see times across the country, they might find a haul of stolen goods, property maybe that was taken from properties right across the country, you know, and it's so important to keep your serial numbers for that purpose. You know, that property can then be returned to you, you know, more quickly. Mm.
We're going to Moville now, a theft incident.
Yeah, this theft incident occurred in the area of Ardfoyle, Moville, between 9 a.m. on Friday the 24th of July and 9 a.m. on Monday the 27th of July. A Grant oil boiler was stolen from the backyard of a house in that area between those times. We're appealing to anybody who might have observed any type of suspicious activity in that area between those times to contact Gardaí in Buncrana on 932-0540. Again, if anybody comes across, you know, like the previous appeals, if anybody comes across these items, and I know before there was a spate of this type of activity before, particularly when I think there's houses in that area at the minute being retrofitted, you know, and we often see that in housing estates, that if the oil or the heating system's being changed, you know. So just ask people as well living in that area to be very, you know, be aware that this happened and just to be cautious and notify us if they do notice any suspicious activity. Make Gardaí aware of it.
Moving on now to an assault in Buncrana.
Yeah, this alleged assault occurred at Lasone Green in Ardravan, Buncrana, between 11 p.m. and 11:15 p.m. on Friday the 31st of July. So a man was walking home. He's believed to have been assaulted by another man who wasn't known to him, and he did sustain injuries, none of which are life-threatening in nature. We're appealing to anybody who might have witnessed this incident to contact Gardaí in Buncrana on 932-0540, and if anybody travelled in that area with a dash cam between those times, we're always asking them, you know, for dash cam footage. It's vital to us and to our investigations. So please contact us if you have footage from that area on that date.
Now, the August Bank Holiday weekend, again, there was a massive road policing operation. I think in one of the papers there I'd read this morning, it was the equivalent to a drink or drug driver being caught every 47 minutes across the country.
Yeah, I know that there was a press release issued there with stats. I think I have one of those stats included in here because it's so shocking, that stat, when you read it. You know, it really brings home this, you know, it's worrying, you know, how high the drink and drug driving figures are. So I'll go through this. We did, there was an extensive roads policing operation across the country and across Donegal this August bank holiday weekend. It started on Thursday past the 30th of July and continued then until this morning, Tuesday, the 4th of August. So this enforcement operation focused on the four lifesaver offences of speeding, driving while under the influence of an intoxicant, alcohol or drugs, using a mobile phone while driving and not wearing a seatbelt. So a number of road traffic related offences were detected across Donegal over the course of the weekend. 18 vehicles of various descriptions, tractors, cars, e-scooters were seized for reasons such as no insurance, obstruction, no NCT, dangerous driving, and also from learner drivers who were driving while unaccompanied. And I just want to highlight that today. We just want to remind all learner permit drivers, they have to be accompanied by a qualified driver. That's under the Clancy Amendment. So a qualified driver is someone who has had a full valid driving licence in the same vehicle category for a minimum of 2 years. So if you're a learner driver, do not take to the roads unless you have this qualified driver with you. And 17, we get back to the drink drug driving now. So in Donegal across the weekend, 17 drivers were arrested on suspicion of drink and drug driving. And this is one of our stats now. During the first half of 2026, an average of one driver was arrested by an Garda Síochána every hour of every day for driving under the influence of drugs or alcohol. So that's 4,600 arrests that happened between the 1st of January and the 30th of June of this year across the country. You know, and that's very worrying,
that's
very high figures. So these figures are high, and we're continuing to urge all drivers, please do not ever consider getting behind the wheel if you're under the influence of alcohol or drugs. There's so many other options. Get a designated driver, get a taxi. If it's 4 a.m, 5 a.m, ring home, ring mammy, ring daddy. They would much rather that you get home safely and wake them. They would might be angry for 5 minutes initially when you ring them first out of their bed. They would much prefer that you get home safely. You know, and don't ever get into a vehicle as a passenger if you suspect that the driver might be under the influence. And also, if anybody is aware that somebody is driving while under the influence, perhaps you're in a pub, you're in a nightclub, you know the person's been drinking all night, they've been in your company, you see them lift their keys, they say they're driving home, please alert us. That call could save their life, could save other road users' lives also. So we're asking all road users, look, the bank holiday weekend enforcement operation has ended, but it doesn't mean to say that our road safety campaign ends there. You know, we're asking all road users, take care on the roads, don't take risks, and do everything in your power to ensure that you and everybody else around you stay safe and gets home in one piece.
It is. It's hard. It's hard to pick up the phone and ring and say, look, such and such is, they've had a few pints, they're going home now. But God forbid something happened, you'll be so annoyed with yourself.
Yeah, and listen, even ring the Garda station and say that you would wish to rather, you want to remain anonymous. Even say that. You know, if it is a friend or somebody you know well, you could be saving their life. You have to think, you know, the greater good. Yeah. Say you don't wish to leave your details, but just give them the details so that at least a patrol car can be dispatched and get that person stopped and off the road, you know.
We have questions from last week. One of them is on the rules about e-scooters. They're constantly on the footpaths. Is it legal or not?
So, as we know, if you've been watching the news over the last few weeks, you'll know that new and much stricter legislation is coming into play in relation to e-scooters. It's in the pipeline. It's not in place yet. So in relation to e-scooters at present, e-scooter users have to be 16 years or over. They have to obey a speed limit of 20 kilometres per hour. They have to drive on the left. E-scooters are allowed in cycle or bus lanes and on local, regional or national roads. They have to have lights, a bell or audible warning device, reflectors and brakes on their e-scooter. And it has to be kept in a roadworthy condition at all times. They have to obey signals given by Gardaí or school wardens and follow the same rules of the road that apply to cyclists, including traffic lights, road signs and all types of pedestrian crossings. So e-scooter users cannot use footpaths, pedestrianised areas or motorways. They can't hold or use a mobile phone. They can't have a seat on their e-scooter. They can't carry passengers, you know, for example, carry children to school. They can't carry goods, for example, food or parcel delivery, any type of goods. Gardaí did seize two e-scooters in the Calais area there on Sunday, the 2nd of August, from two children who were both under 16. We're just urging parents, please do not buy e-scooters for your children. Don't allow them to use them under any circumstances. They're not toys. Children are at high risk of being injured or worse if allowed to use them. So please, you know, our appeal today really is to parents. Just be aware. And sometimes maybe the e-scooter doesn't belong to that child. But just even have a chat with your children. If they don't own one and you're aware maybe that their friends have one, have a chat with them. You know, speak to them about your worries and the safety aspect and ask them not to be using.
Thank you very much. Called you Charlene there.
You're right. Charlene, I could be called worse.
And just sorry, just in relation to the e-scooters, say the ones there that were seized from the children, can children be held accountable for them, or would it fall on parents?
Well, really and truly at the minute it'll be as parents. Once they're under 18, the parents will be contacted in relation to it. Now, it would just depend. Each case would be dealt with on an individual basis. It would also depend on what age the child is. So age 12 upwards is the age of criminal responsibility.
Okay.
Yeah, so that's the age that you start dealing with the guards from 12 up. Okay. So if they are 12 and over, possibly the juvenile liaison officer then will be in touch with the parents, you know, will be dealing with the child then in relation to it.
Okay. Yeah. And there's a comment in here, well done, great Garda presence in Downings over the weekend. Well done, everyone. So, Grania, thank you very much.
Thank you.
That is our Garda information slot. We'll have it up on our podcast and on our social media as well. Thank you very much.
No bother, thank you.
We're into the last half hour, we're well into the last half hour of the programme, and I'm joined in studio by Donal Cullen and Geraldine Boucher, who are members of the Milford's Events Committee. The inaugural Summer Festival will run from this Friday, Donal. How are all the preparations going?
Yeah, it's been very exciting to be part of the committee for the festival. It's been over 20 years since we last held a festival in Milford, so it's been very exciting times over the last block of month and getting everything organised and tying down and focusing on how things are going to go and looking at the weather and putting out candles now, and hopefully that everything will go in that direction.
Yeah, there'll be what's the new one that brides do now for the weather? They bury a sausage in the garden.
Right.
So everybody in Milford will be out doing that there. What, Jordan, what can we expect to come up? What kind of vibes are we going for?
Well, it's a music festival, so we have your own very David James on Sunday night.
Excellent.
We have Rhythm and Sticks on Saturday night. Mm-hmm. And then we have some local artists on Saturday and Sunday. Maria McCormick, Shane McGinley, Rory Freel. So it's music based along with a lot of kids activities as well. We have a fun fair in town for the weekend, which is causing great excitement. We have a fun day on the Saturday, Bounty Castle is not for the kids, and it's all free. There's
incredible.
No charge.
Yeah. Incredible. Now, we're saying it kicks off on Friday. It's a weekend long affair, Donal.
That's correct, yes. We're kicking off on Friday evening at 7 o'clock with the official opening, and then we have Malachy Eastwood, who's going to be providing the entertainment for us after that. We also have a local gentleman who will be opening the festival for us, Mr. Cahill Hagan, who has a lifelong in the community games and within community within Milford, so we're delighted that he has accepted the invitation to officially open the festival for us.
There's looking at the list of events here, some of these look like they're going to be great crack. The Mothers and Others is always, it's always a good to go watch one of the matches there. So it is, I always enjoy going to those. A pet show. What's this?
The pet show is just, we've been looking at how we can add something different to the festival, and we just said we'd put in a pet show, so inviting anybody with any animals at all that they feel they would like to bring along and showcase to come ahead and let us see what they have.
And after that there's the Battle of the Bands, or is the application still open for that, or how can people get involved?
There is four bands coming, and they have a 20 minute slot each. They're local bands from Rathmullen and Letterkenny.
Yes.
So they're the only bands that are in that, but there's four of them, which should be good as well.
That's a bit of competition.
Yeah, a bit of healthy competition.
Yeah, exactly. There won't be any harm. And then after that, the single versus married men and women, what is this?
Well, let's see, we have a football match taking place down in the AstroTurf.
Yeah.
So we're looking forward to that again. It's a bit of fun, a bit of excitement, and it's pulling people in to have to see if they can still have a bit of footballing talent.
Yeah. There's loads happening on the Saturday, so there's lots of love, a good wee bit of competition. I think it's good for people, so it is. And then on the Sunday, there's jiu-jitsu display.
That's correct. Yes, that's taking place down in the Milford Hall. It's our local jiu-jitsu group who have kindly offered to put on a display for us down there as well to showcase, I suppose, all what they have done over the last number of years from a young age up to the seniors in it. So that's very, very exciting for us. I suppose people mightn't be aware fully of what jiu-jitsu do, and they would have participated in other shows. So I think it's great to have them involved as well.
There is, and you know, you'll get such a broad age range in that as well. There's so much happening. There's the colour run, a soak the coach, all happening on the Sunday as well. It's great to have events like this here to really highlight everybody in the community.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, we're trying to include everybody.
Mm.
You know, the colour run is actually very good. It includes kids from like 3 up.
Yeah.
Take part in that, and it's very good. It's only a short run around the town. It's 2.5k.
Oh, excellent.
Yeah, so it's short, so adults will be happy with that too. It's great fun.
It is, yeah. And you know what? The photos that you get after an event like that there, they're always ones that you look back at and you really enjoy.
Yeah.
In terms of the organisation for an event like this, when did the preparations begin, Donal?
We've been looking at this, I suppose, going back to the end of last year, roughly around November time, when we would have sort of formulated the committee and started looking at organising a Christmas lights event that takes place in Milford. So we had a massive success with that this year. Then we looked towards then a parade coming up then at St Patrick's Day. But then we thought, well, listen, there's a lot of parades taking place in around St Patrick's Day, so we'll look at something different. So we had a fantastic Easter Sunday parade, which was attended by over 57 or your floats that took part of it.
Incredible.
So that created such an atmosphere, and there was a real excitement about and discussion about providing a summer event. And we sat down and we looked at it and we thought, well, we'll look at maybe just a smaller idea. And then we come up with the idea then that, listen, let's go for a weekend festival event and see how we get on and hold no stops and see what we can get done with it.
Festival led into grew legs and it ended up now being a 3-day festival.
It is, I say. Yeah. It's incredible how much it's taken over. And to have free entry, there's some of the events have a very small fee.
Yeah, very small.
So the pet show's a fiver. The colour run is €3, and I think that's the only ones that there's a. Am I right in saying that? That's the only.
That's correct. Well, we have Collins Fun Fair, who also have their own charge
for
the
rides.
Now, but yes, everything else is a free admission as well. As I say, we have the music and entertainment on all weekend is free as well, which is fantastic. And going by that, there's a wide variance of genre as well that we have on display, from like the very lively rhythm and sticks to going to David James to Marie McCormick and her friends, the Battle of the Bands, to going to Rory Freed on the Sunday, and the Skull Nash into dancing school from Scully Gallagher, Rinka from Fannett, who are also going to be there. Like, you know, so we've covered a wide range in it.
There is. It's incredible. These things don't happen for free. Of course, use our fundraising to support, because like that's 3 days. You know, 3 days. There's a lot packed in there.
That's it. And it's been very entertaining in the events that we have undertaken in relation to the fundraising. You know, we had coffee morning, we had our quizzes, we had a car wash. So there was a great buzz and excitement as well. You know, offering something different. You know, and we'd like to thank all the sponsors and that. And, you know, we're selling tickets as well that have contributed. Again, you know, we're trying to give back to the community and give them something to look forward to. But without being able to get in the sponsorship and stuff, we wouldn't be able to run such a successful free entertainment if we didn't have this.
Geraldine, people, I suppose in Milford, but all the wee pockets of Donegal, the communities are always great. They always come together. Usually whenever a community comes together, it's to support somebody because something sad or something bad has happened. Mm-hmm. It's important to celebrate the community for joyous occasions like this.
Exactly, 100%. It's 20 years since Milford had a festival. And like small towns, it's kind of died a death. Since COVID, it's been very quiet. So the people in Milford are buzzing for this. Everybody's more than willing to support us. Every ticket, every door we knocked on, every ticket we sold, every event we had, the people are coming out and they supported us 100%. You know, nobody has knocked us down. They've all praised us and they're just buzzing for something to be happening in the town.
And for people who want to find out more about the festival, are you on socials or where can they find the programme of events?
Facebook page is Milford Events.
Milford Events.
And everything is on that. And we will be updating it all weekend as well, what's going on every day. Everything's on that.
That's incredible. Thank you so much for coming in, Donal Cullen and Geraldine Boucher. If you want to head on over to the socials there, you'll find out more about it. Thank you very much for joining me in studio.
Thank you very much for having us.
Thank you. Well, it is looking like it's going to be cloudy and misty, and there may be some heavy showers and some thunder, with highest temperatures of 18 to 22 degrees. We're just speaking there. Hopefully that thunder will clear the skies for everyone in Milford for a brilliant festival starting on Friday. and seen you right through to Sunday. At the very top of the show, we had spoken about Letterkenny and the poorest performance it had in terms of breast cancer and getting the referrals done within the time limit. Now, we have a response in from the HSE. And it says, within the HSE West and North West region, the NCCP designated symptomatic breast centre at University Hospital Galway with a satellite centre in Letterkenny University Hospital. These dedicated cancer services are fully committed and focused on providing safe, high quality, compassionate care to all patients with breast cancer symptoms. And we continue to work to ensure that the services are delivered within the national standards in line with demand. Achieving key performance indicators in the breast service remains an ongoing challenge due to consultant vacancies. There's been delays in recruiting a second consultant breast surgeon in Letterkenny University Hospital. However, a locum breast surgeon has now accepted the position with a commencement date of the 19th of August. So that is in about 13 days. Once in situ, the breast waiting list will immediately be addressed. In addition, a second breast radiologist has commenced work in the hospital in December of last year in a temporary capacity and pending appointment to a permanent position. This supports triple assessment clinics, and those clinics involves three key components, which is a clinical examination by a specialist, imaging such as a mammogram or ultrasound, and a biopsy if necessary. There's 18 breast clinics scheduled for August, and this number will increase once the second breast surgeon commences their role. A total of 87 clinics were scheduled, where a total of 782 patients with urgent referrals to the clinic were seen in the first 6 months of this year, and a further 269 patients with non-urgent referrals. It's quite a long statement. We'll have it all up on our website. I'm just aware of time running behind me here, but I have on line one Emma Hart, who's the Policy and Campaigns Manager with the Irish Cancer Society. Emma, quite an alarming headline to read this morning, so it was.
Good morning, and thanks for having me on to talk about such an important topic. So, look, the Irish Cancer Society wants to make sure that every person across the country can get access to the right care in the right place at the right time, and that extends to the diagnostic services. So when a person might feel they have symptoms of breast cancer, any changes or persistent changes in their breast, they will usually present to their GP, and then their GP will determine whether or not they are sent for an urgent or routine referral into symptomatic breast disease clinics. The key word here is symptomatic, so time is really of the essence, and people should be able to access that care in the right time frame. And we understand that there is a postcode lottery across the country, and that is really unfortunate, and the effects are felt really acutely in Letterkenny. So the Irish Cancer Society has been campaigning for quite some time, understanding the distress and the worry that this brings to people, to make sure that all breast cancer clinics across the country have access to the right staffing levels, that they have the appropriate infrastructure, and that people can actually access it in the right time frame in order, if they get a cancer diagnosis, to access their treatment in the most rapid time period possible.
Emma, the saying that there will be a locum breast surgeon starting on the 19th of August in Letterkenny, is that something to be more hopeful about?
I think kind of getting the staff in place in order to deliver the service is the actual right thing to do. I think this speaks to a fundamental issue, however, where we have a right now problem, which is unfortunately too many people, and in this situation, too many women trying to access breast disease clinics aren't actually getting in within the right time frame. But then there's a future problem, and I think it's really important that we talk about both of these things at the same time, that we're not just trying to address a short-term need. Actually, the need is only going to grow as time goes on, and there will be a doubling of cancer cases by 2045 compared to 2015. So what we really need to see, and while this is welcome, that we are looking at additional staff in this case, but what we really need to see is a strategic plan in order to make sure that, first of all, we have enough people training into the required positions, so that we will have enough radiologists, for example, that we will have enough consultant breast surgeons leading into the future, and at the same time that we're already are always building up our stock of equipment to make sure that the equipment is also there for the staff to manage as the need for symptomatic breast disease clinic services grows into the future.
The doubling of the cancer rates by 2045, is that because more people are presenting, or is it because people aren't keeping as well? Or is it a mix?
There will be a variety of reasons for that. And I think one of the most predominant is that we will have an ageing society. So as people become older and live longer, more people will be subject to a cancer diagnosis.
It is obviously very concerning that so many women aren't getting seen to within the recommended time frame. You know, only 11.8%. But that does not negate from the fact that if you notice a change in your, we're talking about breast cancer specifically here, to still to go forward, to go to the GP. But also, and I'm sure this is something that you discuss with your members, is to advocate for yourself, that if things are taking a long time, to keep advocating for yourself.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right there. So for anyone listening today who may have concerns, please go to your GP if you notice any persistent changes, and make sure that you are telling your GP about your symptoms, so that if it does turn out to be cancer, then you can access the right services that you need. I would also encourage your listeners today that if they have any questions or concerns, that they can call the Irish Cancer Society support line to speak to one of our cancer nurses on 1-800-200-700. That's 1-800-200-700.
And we will have that number up on our social media as well, and we'll put it on our website on the news story. Is there any other, I suppose, good resources that people can go to if they have concerns that you'd recommend?
Yeah, if you're looking for more information on signs and symptoms of breast cancer, you can Google the Irish Cancer Society and look for symptoms of breast cancer there, or check out the HSC website.
Emma, thank you very much for that morning. That's Emma Hart, the Policy and Campaigns Manager of the Irish Cancer Society. Do not be afraid to get something knocked about, even if you think that it seems silly. You're, you know, a trip to the doctor about something that seems a bit like it should not be is never a waste of time. I have some comments here that I wanted to get to in relation to today's show. One of them was in relation to this story, and says a few good points raised this morning regarding the HSE once again missing targets for breast cancer in Donegal. Can you find out, is that for all patients or just those on the medical card? Looking at those figures, it's a general referral. So it is. So I'd say that's those just going through the public system. In relation to the cigarettes, so this was the small shop that's saying that they're no longer going to sell cigarettes because of the licensing fee that they have. Teresa is so right. The government should be doing all they can to help rural businesses stay open, not making it more difficult to stay open. People will simply vote with their feet and get cigarettes elsewhere. This is the thing. You're right in saying people will vote with their feet in relation to the cigarettes, but it doesn't seem to be the case with elections. You know, are these the type of things that people should be weighing up in terms whenever they're going to cast their vote? Nuisance calls. This was the chat that we had with Dakota. I've heard someone called the Gardaí regarding this, and they traced the call and got the person and see how they liked it when Gardaí called their house. And that is from Kevin. That is all we have time for today. Greg's back tomorrow at 9 o'clock, and we have John Breslin with Around the Northwest up next. Thank you to Caroline Orr and Shannon Wilkin for researching and producing the show. Talk soon.